trained.
Okay, you finished your education, you were saying that you took all kinds of bad jobs.
Yeah.
Right? How old were you when you finished? You said you finished in 3 years.
Yeah, I was 17.
So you were 17. And where did these jobs lead you? Like, when was your first permanent position?
I did want to go very badly to college. I wanted a law career.
Law?
And I had a right to it. Mm-hmm. Now, Louis Young, my mother's brother-in-law, he was adverse to it. I don't know if it was a form of jealousy. Dora was my mother's baby sister. And I think it was a form of jealousy. They weren't as lucky with their children with affluence. The mother was in poverty with hers, let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. Now, that happens sometimes.
Of course.
And it can create a certain amount of jealousies. I was very hurt, and I think it's affected me the rest of my life, that I couldn't continue what I wanted to go. He wanted me to work for him in McKee's Rocks and shoe business, and I absolutely refused. And my mother says, "Now, what are we going to do? Here's an open job. Here's this. Here's that." And I went there as a really underpaid. I could have got the same job in a department store for more money. But I went to work for him to keep peace in the family. In the short time, I took management of a store he had in Coriopolis, a shoe store. And although he was family, I found I was, every time I wanted to quit for a better job, that Sunday, he was at our house and giving my mother an argument.
So you felt the pressure from the home?
Well, yeah, so you don't, you've got to keep peace in the family. That's always uppermost. Frankly, the man was brilliant, but I have no love for him at all. I won't tell it to my aunt or his daughter, but I think they feel it. He was all right, very selfish, to my way of thinking, very money hungry.
Couldn't recognize other things.
He worshipped the dollar. I remember one of my brother-in-law saying to him, "Uncle Louis, you know, they have no pockets in Tachrichim. You know what Tachrichim are, mm-hmm. shrouds." He says, "Well, I'll have them in mine." Well, that already is a jest.
Mm-hmm. During all this time,
then came the Depression, and I was offered a good position, even then with Gimbel's. I had known my business for one reason, because I went to study. I took mail order courses. I had a week off vacation. I went to Chicago to seminars, and I studied feet and studied shoes. I tried to elevate, and I've done this all my life. Whatever crevice I found myself in, I would try to make the best of it to the utmost of whatever it offered. You know what I mean?
Yes.
If I was selling paper like this, I'd try to find out all about how this paper is made, what it's done, and how they make it, and how it's distributed. I mean, I have I try to make the best of a situation.
You adjust and also delve into it fully.
Yes. You can't adjust understand. Unless you do understand.
Right.
And it works. I left him then. You get to a point of pride, too, you know. And then I was a young man. I was trying to support a family, and I wasn't getting reimbursed for it by the time I was. I wasn't getting anything that was promised by the time I would go from Dinwiddie Street to Coriopolis. I'd have to catch a 7:10 train at the PNLE. It took two streetcars to get to the PNLE, you know. And those years, we never closed the store before 9 o'clock, and maybe around 10, 11 o'clock on Saturdays. So, well, then your depression came. And I had no trouble getting the job immediately for the free distribution of shoes for the Allegheny County Relief Board. That's what it was called then. Had no trouble getting a job with them because I had knowledge in it, and I had enough knowledge to be able to supervise it and take people off these early relief rolls. This is, you know, since Roosevelt came in office.
Now, when you say you're supporting a family, are you talking about
my family?
Okay.
My mother, my sisters, brother.
Okay, you weren't married.
We all helped each other. Oh no, don't marry late in life. And then I got into see, I left day off at the Depression. Depression had, I assumed the distribution for Allegheny County. In other words, I got a political job.
Right.
Based on knowledge, because they had nobody else, let's be honest. And there was, they didn't know, this thing just came. Nobody knew what to do about it. Nobody, none of the officials. It came out, Roosevelt decided to help people.
And how long did you have that job?
Oh, I had it till after the Depression. After the Depression died down, then I opened my own place. I opened it in the State Theater Building on the 8th floor.
The State Theater Building, when was that that you opened your own place?
Well, hold up, would be, I'm just trying to figure. We can tell on that NRA poster outside.
Right.
Well, I can figure it for you in a minute. That would be in the early, about 34, 35.
Just to give us an idea of who you are.
I'm trying to, years I'm not good with without looking up. I'm trying to associate it with events.
Excellent memory.
Well, only with events.
Well, that's fine.
See, because I vividly remember when the first housing project was put up, when FDR made his first trip to Pittsburgh to open it, he had to pass our house. We were on Dinwiddie Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that group of cars, that cortege, whatever you want to call them, they went up Dinwiddie Street and down, and we thought it was a big thing.
Sure.
Of course, the Jews thought Roosevelt was a big thing for them, too. He had appointed Jews to the cabinet. I mean,
how are you affected by World War II here?
World War II, I was greatly affected. Come in.
That's me. Why don't we then continue talking about once your business was established, from that point, how did it grow and develop? Well,
it started to grow and develop, and then I had to go to war.
And so you
yeah. Then
where
I.
Where did you serve?
Then I went to war, and then I went into medical basic in Rockford, Illinois. Because of my training, I was pulled out of basic. They found I had nobody with orthopedic mechanical training. Well, in the entire army of 10 million men, there were only 99 who had an orthopedic mechanical background. I'm not talking surgery or anything like that.
An understanding of it.
Well, the mechanics. Okay. Uh-huh. That's what I do now, what I've always done. And they cut me short, and I was sent from there to Camp Grant in... Camp Grant was in Illinois. I was sent to Vancouver, Washington. We lived in barracks that were built by old General Grant. And from there, I went to Southern California I was transferred into a new hospital that we opened up for evacuation of patients. It was right in the San Fernando Valley. It was called Birmingham General Hospital. And I served there till... shortly after the surrender of the Japs. Who surrendered first? Germany?
No. And then the Japanese.
Yeah, after the Japs. I served then. I was one of the few in the Army who had, was allowed to specialize, who did what he did in civilian life.
Right. Right. After that, you came back to
Pittsburgh. Returned from the Army. Yeah, I didn't want to. I liked Southern California very much. But there were family, our family ties were strong, and nobody would listen to the letters and stuff. It's meanwhile that I got married while on leave.
You met her in Pittsburgh on leave?
A Pittsburgh girl. No, before. I knew her before. I married her. And
what year was that?
Let me give up. We can chronologically do
it. Was it during the war still?
Oh, yes, the war was on.
So in the early
40s? Let's see, my Marlene is 33. Figure.
34 years ago you were married?
Approximately? Yeah, 4 years.
1943.
Yeah, well, that's right. Camp Grant. It wasn't a happy marriage. It's one of those things that came with war and everything, and I... As I told you shortly before going into war, we had a lot of very liberal thinking groups here in Pittsburgh, especially among our Jews. you know, like, you take guys like Gaby Rubin, the Swimmer Boys. I mean, these were all friends of mine. And
when you say liberal, do you mean specifically in a
phrase almost,
like
we were
socialism?
Almost socialist, almost communist. We weren't communists. We refused to sign petitions and all of that. Although a lot of our friends became card-carrying communists right here in Pittsburgh. And some very, very brilliant minds. I can't tell you the difference. I would name you some right now, but I'm very reluctant to,
sure.
Because you'd know some of them.
It's not necessary.
I'm very reluctant
to. At the time,
to.
It was
yeah,
very
but at the time, our thoughts were liberal. Jews were being, there were pogroms in Europe. And here they were offering an area for Jews, Bessarabia Sinus petition. And there was, most of us are. We were liberal. We were open thinkers. We believed in education. We sort of religion. You go through that phase. Well, what is this religious thing? What is? Well, I say, as Jews, our religion is a historical analogy of our ancestry and our life. That's what we are. I mean, our belief, our Chumash, is a history book that we believe in. See, so you. And there are the elaborations of the Chumash, you know, the various commentaries, the Mishnah, the Tanakh, all of those things. Still further history.
Mm-hmm.
And history according to man. And you got to think of social reforms. You get a man like Roosevelt in, who was a social reformer. And you say, Jesus, that's all he was a social reformer.
Mm-hmm.
So that created a little animosity with some of the Goyim. There are Goyim in the groups, too, don't, you know. There, you see, we didn't have the diversions that you have today.
This was your social life, really.
Our social life was this little groups. We met in homes where there weren't, if there was a big group, you met the Zionists. I don't know if you know that. The Zionists had, it was a combined shul and dance hall at corner Green Street and Center Avenue, which later Lando built a theater for Yiddish. The theaters then on Center Avenue, there was the Victoria Theater, the Center Square, and the Elmore Theater. The Elmore Theater was most, where we kids could, and the Gem on Fifth Avenue, where we could go in for 6 cents and have our lunch and see whatever, there were continuous things. That was Pittsburgh those years.
But as a young man, your social life was involved with these groups and with
political thinking. We were always,
oh
yeah,
thinking.
All of us.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Jew boys of my age will deny it. They were involved a little bit. Because we didn't have the things. You had dances. You don't dance every day.
You
had a card game.
How about you personally? Like how
me? When I say we, it's me.
Right, okay.
When you hear me, we, it's me. Little card games. We weren't rich. There couldn't be big card games.
Uh-huh.
So the big night was Saturday night. You know, because even when we went to school, we all worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, mm-hmm. sold newspapers, we did this, we did that.
How intense was your involvement then in following Judaism at this time? Did you put it aside, or did you follow
never,
it?
No, I never put real Judaism aside, in a sense, because I've always read it. If you want to call it a hobby, you can't take it from a religious view, although we were Orthodox, we were more leaned, even my father, I was shown, they leaned towards the conservative, not Reformed. I'll tell you, Reformed at that time, they used to, but even us, this may be an interesting slant for you, we were Litvaks. All right. If a Litvak boy or girl married a Gilichaner, now they're Jews. The old man was ready to say Kaddish and beat the hell out of the girl. A Romanian was terrible, just as bad as a Galicianer, even worse. So the feud was always in the hill, in the Judaic sense, because as I said, as kids, even born, first generation born in this country, we saw the influx of the greenhorn kids who didn't talk English. They had to go to school with us.
Mm-hmm.
We had to help them.
What was your feeling towards them? Did you feel...
No, we felt we had to help them. They were ours.
Right, okay.
They were ours. There was
plenty of little bastards, but they were still ours. You help them as much as you can, but we saw that, and I saw some of these guys grow into very competent, big businessmen, and maybe they lacked they had something that we didn't have in America. They had a cunningness that the American-born Jew did not have, because we did not have oppression here. We faced a certain amount of anti-Semitism, but we could always take it out with fists on the street.
You never really fought a great deal of anti-Semitism here in Pittsburgh?
There was always a little undercurrent of it. There still is, but there was then even more so, because then the Goyim were more religious.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you killed Jesus. They go in their damn church and see this guy with the blood running out of him, tied with nails to a cross. The Jews did that. What the hell is he going to think about a Jew? I mean, so that was the anti-Semitism in those days. It was strictly religious. It was not on any economic or other basis than religion. What they were taught, that in their catechism.
Mm-hmm.
See? And that's what that's the type of anti-Semitism that pervaded. Strange enough, the blacks and the Jews got along pretty good. Now, we would hear this Christ killer. That was the word they would throw at us when there was any little street fights. But we were able to defend ourselves. Now, these boys that came from Europe of our age, they had a greater cunning, a mental acumen that was far greater than ours, because they couldn't fight back. They learned the subversive ways. They knew if they did fight back, it had to be in a subversive manner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm bringing it across the way I'm trying.
No, I understand, because of their prior experience.
So yeah, but we grew up with
it. Right, right.
So there was a different way of thinking. You know, like an average American Jewish boy would never think to cheat a goy of something. American-born, seldom. I mean, they were rare. But a European-born Jewish boy would think.
Even
Yankel the gun up out of the hill, he used to steal bicycles as soon as he learned English. I'm just going to paint him and sell him maybe to the same goy the next morning till he starts stealing them from Jewish boys. I'm just giving you an idea of some of those things that were prevalent at that time. I look for the psychological causes of it, and that's what I'm trying to give you. And that's how these groups emanated. That's why socialism became strong among Jews. We were socialists. The Jews backed Debs. Eugene V. Debs had big backing during when he ran for president. Just on account of the war was he incarcerated. He was a very fine man. He came to Pittsburgh to speak, and the audiences were always Jews. Any socialistic thing, union thing. The Arbiter Ring was that we had here in Pittsburgh, built that beautiful building at time on Robert Street.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own cemetery. Their cemetery is still here.
Mm-hmm.
And we had as growing up kids, we had the use of their auditoriums for dances, for free, you know. But the socialism was very big with us.
It was very big with us.
There's no question of it, because you saw what happened in New York. All your unions started with
it.
Right. So
how did things change then here, socially and religiously, in terms after World War II? Lifestyle.
After World War II, my personal lifestyle changed quite a bit.
I don't know what
to say about others.
Well, we want to know whether yours changed.
I still had an obligation to my mother. Of course, my sisters and brothers have grown up. I modified my very orthodox beliefs. I modified it to an extent like I'll drive to shul, or I never would.
Mm-hmm.
See? I don't like the worship in a Reformed temple. I've been there and I don't like it. It goes against my grain. I don't even make the Sephardic worship at the Tree of Life, and it's good. Don't get me wrong. We're all Jews. We all go one way. And God, I believe, like my dad did, every event he would say, if God lets me live, and I do believe in God, and I do believe the way our people believed in God. So I don't care how the hell we worship. As long as we know we're Jews and we isolate ourselves from those who don't believe like us.
You think we should isolate ourselves from those who
don't? No, I would like to see a little closeness, but we ourselves tend to isolate us. That's really what I mean to bring out. You know, like here, I'm active in B'nai B'rith. Now, you know, you have to be a Jew to be in there, regardless. And you don't want a more broad-minded organization than B'nai B'rith. Now, our particular lodge is, I'd say, 95% Deutsche Yehudim, the German, well, they're not German Jews, they're Reformed. Because a lot of your fancy Reformed Jews now, I know their parents and grandparents were very Orthodox Jews, believe me. I was once talking to Rabbi Ilson when he first came to Pittsburgh, and we became friendly. One of his daughters had a little orthopedic problem. A very fine gentleman. And he told me, like, his father was a Hasidic rabbi in Brooklyn or Williamsburg or one of those places. But see, there's a certain inherent, I think, hereditary background that draws you to Judaism. I'll give you a piece of history I should have given you early. It's very fascinating, and it's a word to mouth that was passed to me. My father had a brother here, Yeshua Lowitz. My father's name is Green. My uncle Yeshua is Lowitz. Ask a kid 6 years old, Daddy, why are we Green and why is uncle? He was older than my father. So he says, he tells me, you see, to escape the draft in Europe, they would turn over to a family who was childless or boyless to their name. They would transfer. See, like on my paternal side, my father's father was married to two sisters. One's husband had died. His wife had died, and according to the ancient laws, and it's a good law. Who could be better to a sister's orphans or a brother's orphans than her own uncle? Face it. I mean, that's the law, too. That's
in Israel, I don't know
the marriage laws in Israel are very severe. They have to. They have. It is very, and it's a good thing. I mean, we attach so much to love, but it seems love has a lot of attachments to it. Anyways, they come from this little village. My father had two brothers, my uncle Yeshua, and a baby, Joseph, he would be. Joe would be his name. They had an old uncle who decided to emigrate to Israel or Palestine to die. A lot from Pittsburgh when I was a little kid, incidentally, like Davidson. It's a good name to remember. He was a shamisen Bishankiv shul. He and his wife, when they got old, emigrated to Israel, to Palestine, we called it then. It wasn't Israel. To live there and finish there. Everybody wants to be buried in Palestinian soil, and according to our customs, when you're buried here, they still throw some Palestinian dirt on you. Am I right? You seem versed a little bit. he decides to go there, so they get a horse and wagon, two barrels, their possessions. He took two barrels for safety to hide the boys. Before they got to the German border, they were waylaid by highwaymen, the way I got it. The uncle was killed. The boys were spared because they had hidden in these herring barrels or whatever it was my great-uncle was carrying. At my father's side, they were all Talmudim, The women worked their fannies off in the business and in the house, and these guys stayed in the Midrash all day and studied the Midrash, the Mishnah, whatever they... That was their life. Anyways, these two boys were taken in by a German family, the name of Lowitz, German Jews, in Frankfurt on Main, and they were raised there. These were very wealthy people. Now, my uncle Yeshua was raised to be a Schaefer. He wrote Torah. Among my collections, I haven't taken them out yet from when I went to war. I have letters that he wrote. It's all in actual Torah script, his letters. That takes a brain. Mm-hmm. They lived here on Elsner Square. He had smicha in Europe. But because he had to work Saturday for a living here, he would kill his own chickens. He could check them legally. But for you or for his brother, for my father, no. I mean, that's the kind of background I'm giving you. Even though in Germany he was already raised in the precepts of mm-hmm. German Jewish, of Reformed Judaism. But he still... What I do against myself, I'm allowed, but I won't do it for you. Anyways, these two boys were raised by these people who were very wealthy on a big estate and were educated on... My Uncle Yeshua, as I told you, was a Schaefer and as a rabbi, which he did not practice in this country due to grief at all. He could have carried on his smicha. And as Joseph became a big lawyer and was appointed by the Kaiser at that time to... like an attorney general. Well, he was made a Richter, a judge. A Richter was the word they told him. Mm-hmm. A Richter is judge. And they were celebrating his appointment on the estate that these people had, the Lowitzes, and they were playing polo, which was the game. He fell from his horse and he got killed, Joseph. My Uncle Yeshua just couldn't take it. They were so close going through this thing in Lithuania. Their closeness was great, being raised by a family, a noble, really. These people were wonderful. Well, they kept contact with my father, who was left in Lithuania. They kept contact mm-hmm. with their sisters. Oh, yeah, these people raised them, which was a big mitzvah, too. Mm-hmm. Taking two boys, their uncle got killed, going to Palestine, and the uncle, they had a good name as Talmudim. You know, on my father's side, the family was known. And regardless, so he emigrated. Uncle Yeshua couldn't stay. The grief was on letters written to my father that time. I've never heard of such grief for a brother. He came here a very poor man. My father was already here, a very young man, although he was older than my father. My father left Europe under the circumstances that most did. But he left a rich boy and came to poverty. Let me put it that way. And what did he do for a living at that time? He sold gas mantles door to door. That was my Uncle Yeshua. Then his girlfriend, who was a school teacher in Europe, my Aunt Yetchen, she followed him here, and they got married in this country. Now, you might no part of this family. If you remember John Dewey, the great writer, the American writer, John Dewey, economist, philosopher.
Very sure, in education especially.
Well, my cousin Stella, as Uncle Yeshua's middle daughter, married him when his son stood for him and was older than her. Now, his children all turned out, I can't say all. Now, anyways, they went through poverty here. Well, this gives you a good background of the mental training of what you're left with of what you want to give your kids. And they were big people. Mm-hmm. Stella was the first to found for the Pittsburgh Press the travelogues. She went west, she traveled the world over, she married a guy who built in San Francisco, that big bridge.
Golden Gate.
The Golden Gate Bridge. he died, and she went around always in these philosophical and educational circles. That's why I'm bringing this out to you.
Okay. Here.
That was her connection. That she married a man strictly for his wisdom. Love never entered in. How the hell can love enter with a 90-year-old man and a 40-year-old woman? But that was it. The other daughter, Bertha, still living, just lost a son here. Was killed by an automobile crossing the road. And my cousin Milton Goldstein. Did you know Milton? Well, his mother, Bertha, was married to Goldstein from Brownsville, PA. There was a Ruby Goldstein and another one. Anyways, she's still living. Well-educated girl. Now, Edith, I don't know if she's living or not. She started the bookkeeping system for Morris Kaufman, for Kaufman's department store. She didn't get along with her sister. She became insane, really. Anybody that came calling on her sisters were taking away the boyfriends from her. As I told you, then my father, being the baby of these brothers, they were very close, and we would have Eva would stay for time at our house.